Welcome to Agent Blue, your comic book explosion podcast. I'm George Green.
I'm Michael Bonanno III, and today we're going over character arcs.
Oh yeah, just make it sound any more boring than it is. Today we're going to go over character arcs. I guess I'm a little bit more enthused over it. Yeah, I thought, you know, because the movie's coming out 2 days, you know, we got to get this out and we got to get these story arcs done. And I figured this would be the best way to roll right into the movie is to just kind of recap some story arcs and some character development throughout the 11 years of the MCU.
I mean, we've got so much to go over. So many... everything.
Well, I can make this easy. We can skip over Captain Marvel.
I mean, she's only got one movie and one appearance to date.
And, really, I guess we can skip over, like, Wasp and whatnot, but we can't skip over Ant-Man and the Wasp.
So we're mainly just going to focus on Ant-Man for that.
Yeah. And then I guess we can talk about Black Widow. Hawkeye. I guess we could touch upon Nick Fury, but there's not a whole lot to go off of for there as well.
His character arc is he loves cats, meets a Flurkin, has his eye scratched out, and then becomes director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I mean, we can really just focus on the original six. Iron Man, Captain America, Hulk, Thor, Black Widow, Hawkeye.
I mean, those are the people we're going to see in the at least first 30 minutes of the movie.
Well, then that's what we're going to start with first. We'll start with Iron Man.
Because he had the first movie.
He had the first movie. So, Iron Man's story arc, I feel like since he was the forefront of the MCU, his is the most important.
He is going to be the one that had been shoved into the role for Endgame as hero. So, yeah, I'd say he is most important. What I mean by that is the fact that he and Thanos are so similar.
Right, they are almost the same. You know, they're very close in similarities. You know, because we have Thor. He is a futurist. Thor. Iron Man. I'm going to do this again, aren't I?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say the wrong name every time. Iron Man is a futurist. And so is Thanos. Mm-hmm. You know, they both have that vision for the future, that foresight to kind of have a plan for everything. So, in that sense, I feel like Iron Man could have gone down a similar path to Thanos.
Could have. If he hadn't been blown up by one of his own rockets.
Right. I mean, we see him in the first movie. He's arrogant. You know, he's not too much in the hero role. He's only doing Iron Man to kind of protect himself and his own interests.
Mm-hmm. And then gets immediately shoved into the Avengers initiative.
Yep, by Nick Fury, and he's just, you know. Iron Man 2 is, you can see a little bit more of the hero coming out in Tony Stark, but still not so much.
I mean, he gets super drunk.
The only reason he's in that hero role is because he was forced into it by everybody else. You know, these people are trying to slander his name, and he's really only protecting himself, but they're putting other people in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really does nothing to try to help those people that Whiplash had hurt. He was just trying to fight them. his next appearance would be the Avengers. That's where he really kind of steps up into his hero role as, like, the protector of Earth, you know.
His first real selfless act. Right. He jumped straight into it. He jumped straight into flying into outer space with that thing, with the nuke.
But then in Iron Man 3, you see the repercussions of that.
Yeah, horrible.
Crippling anxiety.
Horrible PTSD.
PTSD just out the wazoo. So that kind of pushes him, like, towards the edge, which brings us to Age of Ultron, where he creates Ultron out of the Mind Stone. And you have a super bot that's a genocidal maniac. He just wants to kill every human on Earth.
The best way to protect everybody is to kill everybody.
You know? And since that was a part of, like, Tony, like, they put, like, a bit of Tony in Ultron, you can kind of see the similarities between Ultron and Thanos.
Well, I mean, they both were trying to wipe out the Earth.
You know? So, but then you see Tony kind of redeem himself with the creation of Vision, but it was still, like, it could have been a problem in itself.
Easily been a problem. That's why everybody was like, no, 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 and Thor comes out of nowhere like, bop, here's Vision.
Civil War.
I have decided 100%. I am the only one that matters here. But we'll get to Thor later.
The very first step of King Thor. He was like, I'm going to do this because I know this is probably going to be the right thing to do. That was his first step towards kingdomhood. Technically speaking, we'll get to this later, so just remind me, but Thor technically is already King Thor. But when we get to Thor, we'll get there. Civil War. You see Tony Stark's extra hard push into his hero role. This is where he decides to take a stand in the Sokovia Accords, to side with the government, even though throughout the most of his solo movies he was against government.
100%.
You know, so...
But he's just he's doing the extreme to do the most good.
Right, he thinks in his mind that going with the government was the right thing. And you see Rhodey takes a side too, and, you know, everyone's very split on that. But still towards the end, he still leans towards Captain America's side. You know, he doesn't bring Cap in. He doesn't tell on Cap, you know, like, at the end. Even though they had that big fight, you know, he's just like, I'm just going to leave it alone.
Yeah, he gets the cell phone and that's it.
You know, he knows Cap's not wrong. He knows they're on different sides.
He knows Cap's not wrong, but he also thinks he himself is right.
Right. Which then brings us to, Spider-Man Homecoming, where you really see him reprise his, like, hero role, you know, bringing up the next generation of superhero. He takes that, like...
Gets shoved into a surrogate father type of...
Right, right. And he doesn't do a bad job, but, you know, he could do a little bit better. He's not perfect.
You know, we look at Spider-Man Homecoming, and we watch it, right? And we're just like, yeah, Spider-Man, do that thing right there. You know, just continue, go through, whatever. But then, like, if you really think about it, like, Tony actually has the whole thing covered. Like, he knows what he's doing. He's taken everything that Peter has said into consideration and had, you know, everybody in the right place to take the Vulture down. And he's just being a little kid. He's just being a kid.
He could have said something, you know?
He could have, but how many times do parents tell us exactly what's going on, when it's going on?
Well, it's not his parent, and B, Spider-Man, Peter Parker is a superhero. He's got superpowers.
Yes, so?
You don't have superpowers.
You don't know that?
No. Ooh.
Don't you remember throwing me into concrete wall? I still don't feel that.
And now, moving on to Infinity War. You kind of see the same Spider-Man Homecoming Tony Stark as you see. You know, he still has that, like, protector role, but then he's still reluctant to call Cap, you know? He's still reluctant to do what needs to be done. He was trying to solve this all. He's not
just reluctant. He just straight up doesn't do it. Bruce is the one who calls him.
Well, he doesn't get a chance to actually call him, if you kind of see it. Like, he just waits.
He drops the phone.
Yeah, you're right.
He could have called him at any point. He could have called him at the moment he brought it up when he pulled out the phone. He could have done it right before he ended up in outer space. He could have done it at any point. But Banner's the one who called.
That's true. Speaking of Banner, that brings us right into the Hulk. Before we do that real quick,
I guarantee at this point, because of what's just happened in Infinity War, Iron Man, Tony Stark, is regretting so bad siding with the government in Civil War, because he probably could think of a bunch of ways that if they were on the same team, that he and Cap could have come up with a plan to stop this whole thing from happening.
Yeah, they could have. I don't think he's regretting it. I just think he is just trying to move forward. You know?
Yeah, I understand he's trying to move forward, but, like, dang it, if only I was with Cap.
So, on to the Hulk. The 2008 Hulk movie, The Incredible Hulk, technically is a part of the MCU.
Yep, Edward Norton.
So, we can consider that as canon, you know, considering General Ross is brought over into Civil War, like, 9 years later. Not really, 8, but close enough. This Hulk doesn't really have much of a character arc up until we get into, I say Age of Ultron is where you see the biggest difference between Hulk and, like, in his story progression.
Yeah, the biggest thing.
You know, because the first time we technically thought we saw Hulk was the first Avenger. So, when you move into Age of Ultron, you know, that beginning scene where Hulk's already with the team, you know, he seems to have a bit of self-control. He's not so wild. Black Widow's able to talk him down from being the Hulk. So, it's like your first noticeable, like, change in the Hulk, his change towards being a more, like, Professor Hulk, a more usable instead of so savage. But also then we see what happens when he gets his mind played with by Scarlet Witch and just goes nuts in the city.
Yeah, pretty sure he saw Infinity War. I'll say that every time.
You do say that every time. You know, they could do, I hope they do some sort of, like, sense of, like, what the Hulk maybe saw if this theory is true, where Scarlet Witch was showing everybody visions of the future instead of just visions. But we'll have to see that, you know, where it stands.
Well, those visions caused Thor to create Vision.
This is true. So, there is some truth to him.
And you know, Thor was
probably the one searching him out. The Mind Stone was warning everybody.
If Wanda didn't give everybody visions, she would have never fallen in love with Vision.
This is true. So moving on, we don't see the Hulk again until Thor Ragnarok. where he is the gladiator.
The real protagonist of this movie.
Yeah, for real. He's a champion. He's a lot smarter. He's been the Hulk for some time, so the Hulk has had time to...
he is now like a 5-year-old child.
Develop, yeah. And he's like a child, but he has this like sense of empowerment because he's the champion. You know, he gets all these special privileges and whatnot. He's comfortable there. This is an area where the Hulk can kind of flourish. And that's also where you see like kind of a new relationship between Banner and the Hulk, because Banner doesn't really turn into the Hulk because he doesn't want to get stuck.
Yeah, that's his biggest fear.
But then at this point, you know, this is the first time you really see Bruce Banner has to die in order to become the Hulk in Thor Ragnarok. Like, he had to legit, like, almost kill himself.
Was the first, not almost, he 100% did. He just splat. He splat.
He splatted, but he didn't die, because obviously the Hulk came out.
Oh, he died. Hulk just resurrected him. And it's the first time we see it occur, but it's not the first time it happened.
If you're talking about the deleted scene where...
No, I'm not talking about a deleted scene. I'm talking about in Avengers, when they're all talking, he says, "I tried to put a bullet in my head once and the other guy spit it out." He killed himself. The Hulk just made sure he didn't die.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying, but it's the first time you see it.
Yeah.
The first time you physically see he has to die, and the Hulk just kind of resurrects him. We don't see the Hulk in Infinity War. We see the relationship between him and Bruce Banner. We kind of do. You see him get beat up in the first 30 seconds of the film. You know, they just want to show how strong Thanos is. But he's just the whole time is arguing with Bruce Banner about not coming out. That's why I feel like the next incantation of the Hulk is going to be the Professor Hulk. Because Bruce is going to find a way to...
Bill Bixby that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Next in order of appearance would then bring us to Iron Man 2, which is Black Widow.
Okay, Black Widow. I feel like she has... she's got some. Okay, here we go.
Okay, Black Widow. You see her in Iron Man 2. She's just a super spy.
Always just a super spy until
just a super spy. The Avengers. Her relationship with Clint Barton kind of brings like
a little more humanity.
A little bit more humanity instead of just the spy, heartless, whatnot. Moving on to the Winter Soldier is where you see a huge development in her character, where she is helping Captain America, and you can see that she actually cares, at least somewhat.
She stops being so much of just a heartless spy and starts being like a good friend spy.
Yeah, even though in the beginning of the movie she was, you know, on the same mission with him and stealing secrets, but...
Well, spies do bad stuff too, like...
Right, I guess you're right. She's in Age of Ultron.
You want to think about it, she wasn't originally on the side of the Americans.
This is true. She was a Soviet spy. Age of Ultron, you kind of see her character really develop as like a love interest for Bruce Banner.
Out of nowhere,
yeah. This is like some serious character development. What really kind of baffles me is, did they only do that story to bring more humanity to Black Widow's character? Because
if you notice, or did they do it to bring more humanity to the Hulk? I mean, they could have just brought his girlfriend back. They could have. And there's been talks to bringing the actress back to play Betty. But right now she's playing Karen.
Yeah, but then you see that Hulk has another love interest in Valkyrie. And if they go up the Professor Hulk route, you know, he might need a little Valkyrie.
They didn't look like romance. They looked like brother and sister.
I don't know. We'll see. You know, because you've seen Bruce kind of fancy.
According to the posters, Valkyrie's been dusted.
She's not been dusted.
According to the posters.
No, Shuri's been dusted, according to the posters. Not Valkyrie. What posters are you seeing?
Avenge the Fallen. Continue.
She was in a trailer. I'm just saying, she was in a trailer. None of the dust had ever been in a trailer.
Just because she's in the trailer doesn't mean she wasn't dusted. They could have just brought her back first. She could be an LMD.
Valkyrie comes back first.
She's an LMD.
Age of Ultron, Civil War. She really takes a side with the government here in Civil War, with Tony Stark.
Well, she had real no choice.
At the end of the movie, she just kind of helps
Steve.
Captain. Steve Rogers, yeah.
What else is she going to do? They are friends.
They're friends. And then you see her as she was kind of a rogue in Infinity War. She changes her hairstyle to help disguise herself. You know, she's on the side of Cap and Falcon, and they just kind of go in and do their thing. She's also on the front lines of the Battle of Wakanda. So she's, you know, at least she's still willing to defend the Earth.
Well, I mean, I feel like anybody at this point, like, whether good or bad, would be trying to work together for Infinity War. But, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you don't see any of the bad guys from any of the movies coming out to help.
Well, how many of them are still alive?
None.
That's what I thought.
Okay, now we're on to the best, Thor, duh. That's subjective to me and everybody else around me, including you.
No, Captain America's the best movie superhero, and Spider-Man's just best, period. End of story. For me.
Let's just keep moving. We're not going to argue about this today. So, we see Thor in his first movie. He's very young.
Arrogant.
Very arrogant.
Very bratty. He's an EK, entitled kid.
Yeah, he's very bratty. He kind of does his own thing and doesn't notice the consequences. And he, you know, he plays a bigger role in the Avengers, as in, you know, around all these, you know, mortals, because everyone's calling Thor a god. You know,
he's an alien.
Yeah, he's just tops, man. He's got this. He's walking around, you know, he's cocky.
I think he's always cocky. No matter how much he grows, he's still that a little bit cocky.
Yeah, that's true. He says that, like, I'm going to be a king attitude, which comes with his cockiness. But he's the only one worthy of Mjolnir, which also could help.
I mean, I've said this last time, not in the podcast, last time we tried to record this episode. Or was it the other podcast? The hammer being Mjolnir, having the inscription saying, "He who is worthy to wield this hammer will gain the power of Thor." But Thor is the only one worthy to wield it, and I mean, it's kind of foreshadowing the fact that he's going to be able to use his lightning and thunder abilities without that hammer.
Yeah, I get that. They definitely could have explored the hammer in more of a sense, because it is a very mystical weapon and its properties are interesting. But, you know, with the Chris Hemsworth willing to take the role of Thor as far as he can. I don't think they need the option for the hammer to be around to create another Thor. Like, they don't need that because they have Chris Hemsworth is just going to stay for a while. So getting rid of it was just to grow the Thor character.
Yeah, to show what he can be. Mm-hmm. Even though if we want to talk about what happens in the comics, he's just turns into Donald Blake in the beginning. But
so, go ahead.
His character development goes from this cranky little entitled brat to, you know, becoming a little bit more wise. And it doesn't really change, his character really doesn't change drastically until the third Thor movie, with the added of...
No, I think his initial change happens in Age of Ultron, where he sees the Vision, and he's like, something's wrong, I gotta go find out, and he goes on a quest for the stone.
Yeah.
That is where
the change happened, but I'm saying, like, you don't really see the effects of that change until Ragnarok. When Taika Waititi comes in with, let's make everybody funny.
Everybody's awesome. So in the Thor Ragnarok, you see that Thor has seen the end of his, the end of Asgard, mm-hmm. the end of its people. This is all foreshadowing, and we all think it was for Ragnarok, but then we all realized that it was for Infinity War and Endgame. But
yeah,
but you know, you really see his character develop. This is where you see him lose his hammer. He loses his father, and then he becomes greatly powerful. You know, like, before he was never this strong.
Yeah.
You know. And I like to make the comparison between the character Gore and Hela, because the way that they're both, their powers kind of work the same. In the comics, Gore wanted to kill all gods, and, I mean, Hela only wanted to kill Asgard. But technically speaking, you know, that similarity can be made.
She is the god of death.
Right. She plays her same role in the comics as well.
Yeah.
But then you see in the continuation of that comic book with Gore, it moves forward into time where you see a King Thor and he has no arm. Well, he has an arm, but it's metal, and then he has
a Winter Soldier arm. He has a Nick Fury eye.
Right. So we see in Thor Ragnarok that Thor does lose his eye.
He gains the eye patch, but then he also gains a new eye in Infinity War.
Right. And then he's gonna lose it again.
No. He's gonna rip it out. So then we see
him pull more into like his God of Thunder-esque stature. Where he has more control, not more control, but he has, he doesn't need his hammer to summon the powers of the lightning anymore.
Yeah.
And you see him whoop some booty with it. Bringing us into Infinity War and pretty much the half of the decimation of his people. You know?
Yeah. Watching them all burn. But then we could also foreshadow the fact that we might get Asgard on Earth now that, you know, there's only a quarter of Asgard left.
Right. After everyone's just been decimated.
Yeah. And, you know, Norway.
You would think that Thanos would take into account that he just killed half of the Asgardians.
You know, it's funny. Like, half of the people died in the war against Hela. Then you get more people dying at the hands of Thanos physically, And then he snaps out of existence, a half of the people still alive from the people he didn't physically kill and the people who weren't already dead.
What they could do, they could potentially not undo the snap and just get some heroes back, but use the recreation of Asgard on Earth as like a haven for aliens that have nowhere left to go.
So instead of being New Asgard, it's just, I mean, it's technically New Asgard, but like, instead of it just be Asgardians, we get like a Better Ray Bill type, we get a Drax type, we get
if you think about it,
and I'm saying type because we're not going to get, we could get Better Ray Bill, but we're not going to get Drax, we're not going to get a Gamora type, especially not after Gamora died.
At the end of the God Bomb storyline, King Thor of the future, his Asgard is void of almost all Asgardians, and it's just a safe haven for the universe. Really, a lot of there's some Asgardians, there's aliens that have no planets to go back to. You know, it's a pool of people. You know, it's kind of like the Genosis for the mutants.
Genosha.
Sorry, I was looking at the Star Wars poster when I said Genosis.
Okay. Different universe.
Same franchise, though. Disney still owns them.
Different franchise, different universe, same company. No,
same franchise. I refuse to believe that Star Wars is not just the future of the MCU. It's fine. You'll get it in a couple of years.
No. Star Wars is the past of the MCU, bro. A long time ago in a galaxy far away. Yeah, I want to see a Jedi. I would love to see a Jedi appear in the MCU, but that's not what we're talking about.
It could happen.
They are a Marvel comic, but...
On to the next one. In Thor, we see our first appearance of Hawkeye, Clint Barton.
Yep.
He's really not in the movie all that much to make so much assumptions out of. And the first time you really see him is in the Avengers, and he's mind-controlled for more than half of it.
Yep. Yeah. He hated that. Jeremy Renner? That's his name.
But he played the villain. He made a pretty good villain, you know, just playing the lackey. He
played a pretty good henchman.
You know, he did some damage. He was able to really do some damage. So moving on to Age of Ultron, where he really comes into his role, where you really get to see him. He's a lot funnier. You know, he makes a comment about having a bow and arrow, fighting robots. He doesn't really know what's on.
And he aims his bow and arrow at Quicksilver and says, nobody would know. If you have an arrow sticking out of your chest, who is the first person they're going to go to in the Marvel Universe?
What if he pulls the arrow out?
You still got literally an arrow straight through the chest. Like it's not a bullet size. It looks like an arrowhead. But not the point. That was also not even supposed to be in the movie, but it was just such a great ad lib.
Moving on to Civil War. Well, actually, no. Age of Ultron, you see that Clint Barton's a family man. You know, he has a family. It brings a very humble spot to him. You know, he's just kind of doing this. This is his job, but he's got a family at home to protect.
Yep.
And Nick Fury even mentions that his deal was to protect his family at all costs. So we move into Civil War, and he really only gets involved because Cap calls him.
Well, he has great respect for Captain America.
So, you know, he really just joined that side of the team. He fought Black Widow, and they were just sparring the entire time. Like, if you notice, they only really fought each other
They didn't really fight at all. They were like, really so fight. Are we still friends? And he, yeah, and it depends on how hard you hit me.
And then Hawkeye would just shoot a couple of arrows every few minutes at somebody else to make it look like he's doing something. But he would shoot an arrow at, like, at War Machine, something that wouldn't even hurt him. He wouldn't even use the bow. He would just take it and just throw it. Like a grenade. Just get him close.
The only real time he did any damage with that bow in Civil War was when he put, they did that classic scene.
With Ant-Man?
With Ant-Man. And it wasn't even like his arrow doing the damage. It was just like damage to his costume by an Ant-Man.
So then we move on to, nothing. He wasn't in Infinity War because he was arrested at home.
Same with Scott. You don't really see much
of it. So, moving down to your favorite, good old Captain America.
Yep. Cap's, what is it called? Character development is a... I wanted to say a weird one, but it's really not weird. If you watch what's happened to him, you could really tell why all of it happens. Like, he starts off as that, you know, starry-eyed kid who just wants to, you know, save the world and fight the good fight. And even when somebody, like, tells him, like, the darkest thing that could possibly happen, he's still like, nope, I still want to enlist. And he does. He even jumps on a grenade that nobody knows whether or not it's a dud to protect everybody else. He could have blown himself up.
Yeah.
That's who he was in the beginning. That's who he was in 1945.
And then as the story progresses, you slowly see him, like, reprise his role of captain. You know, he holds himself up to, like, oh, I'm a captain. And you really see that moving on from Captain America into the Avengers. Mm-hmm. You know, even though Tony Stark, Iron Man, is kind of like the leader of the Avengers, he still takes that leadership kind of role and helps plan and whatnot.
I don't care if Tony Stark is funding the Avengers or whatnot. Captain America is the leader, and that's the end of the story. Like, I understand that Tony is technically the leader, but there is no way in anywhere that Captain America is not the leader. I mean, you see it the most in the very beginning of Civil War and in Avengers 1, just how much of a captain he is. The reason why I say Civil War is because of how that tactical team was going in Sokovia.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how it was going on. Not Sokovia. Was it Sokovia? It was somewhere.
It was, I thought it was some African country.
It was somewhere. But, like, the way that tactical... how tactical the team was because of the way Cap was.
Well, moving on from there, we can go right into Winter Soldier. And you see... you know, he's a little bit more used to being on, like, in our timeline now, being in the future. You know, he's still not getting out much. He doesn't have a girlfriend or nothing. He's still playing his war role, you know, taking missions and just filling his time up with just mission upon mission.
He's never not. No matter what, he's always in that war role. To him, he's always in war. I feel like it's the only reason he doesn't have PTSD is because he's not done with the war.
This is true. So, you see...
he's going to be dead.
As soon as he does kind of try to make an attempt to get back into normal life, try to, like, talk to a female, it hits the fan again. Nick Fury's in his apartment. Winter Soldier tries to assassinate Nick Fury. And Cap is right back into war again.
Yeah.
Moving on to Age of Ultron. This is where you really start to see the butting of heads between Captain America and Tony Stark. At the end of the movie, you see that Tony Stark kind of takes his step down from the leader of the Avengers, hands the team over to Captain America, knowing that he's a better leader for the team. You know, because Tony Stark has a hard time with those decisions.
Yeah.
So he decides to go at it on his own. You see, obviously, how well that lasts right into Civil War. Tony Stark's got the suit back on. But like you had said, you see that Captain America's form of the Avengers is much... I don't want to say much neater because of what Wanda did, but it wasn't part of the, like, the plan, I guess. You know, everything went smooth. Wanda was
just trying to get the gas out and make sure he didn't blow up Cap.
Right.
It just, you know, she couldn't hold it for too much longer. She was trying to get him as high as possible.
It's not like she did it on purpose. I'm not saying that. But that put in the motion of the Sokovia Accords and the whole Civil War thing happened. And it's really just Captain America trying to protect Bucky the entire movie. And then they're all trying to, he's trying to go after Baron Zemo at the end. And Iron Man's trying to stop him. And it's just a whole bunch of nonsense. But,
yeah, that's how his story plays out. But he goes from this guy who's, like, all about, like, protecting the U.S. and its interests, and then realizing just how bad the U.S. government can be, and then, you know, completely giving up the name of Captain America and becoming the version of him that we know from the comics, Nomad, even though he's not been referred to as Nomad at all.
So with my idea of the original six, actually Captain America is the end.
Yeah, Captain America is the end, and that would leave us at
45 minutes almost.
42 minutes at the moment, yeah. It's 42 minutes. Now it's 43.
Instead of an hour and 18.
Yeah.
I told you we were gonna fly through that one.
Oh, well.
Is there anything else you want to add? We can talk about Thanos, actually. We can add some time onto it. I got a couple new comparisons and a couple new notes.
All right, give us your Thanos.
All right. So, with the original six Avengers leading us into Endgame, I figured that we could get a little bit of a discussion on Thanos as well, because he's also kind of a... he's kind of a main character, especially in Infinity War. He had the screen time, but if you look throughout, he's appeared in every major Marvel movie.
He's had a role, even if he's not appeared. Even if you don't see his grimace looking face.
Right. I mean, you see him. His role is in Avengers. He sends Loki to get the Tesseract with the Mind Stone. He doesn't really make an appearance in Winter Soldier, but in Guardians of the Galaxy, he has Ronan collect a Power Stone for him. In Age of Ultron is, I believe, the one where he finally puts his gauntlet on.
Yeah, I think Winter Soldier was definitely one of those movies that was... It's in the universe, but it's, like, the least connected.
Right. And then we move into Guardians 2. He doesn't make much of a scene. He's kind of quiet up until Thor Ragnarok, where he makes his final appearance, and then Infinity War, where he's pretty much the main character of the movie.
Tony and Thanos are the main characters in that movie.
So, talking about Thanos, that brings me into the question of how bad of a guy is Thanos.
How bad of a guy is he?
How bad of a guy is Thanos? Yes, he's a bad guy.
Well, that's moral relativity.
But, like, when you think about it, he does keep true to his word. So in Infinity War, the beginning of the movie, he's going to kill Thor if Loki doesn't give him the Tesseract.
Yeah.
You know, and he doesn't kill Thor when Loki gives him the Tesseract. He lets Thor go.
Yeah, but what I meant by it's more relativity, meaning like, yeah, he's keeping true to his word. He's technically doing a good thing, kind of, trying to, you know, get more.
It's not. He's not a good guy, but I don't think he's so much of a bad guy. I think he especially doesn't view himself as a bad guy, and his collections of the stone is like a spiritual quest for him. He doesn't do a whole lot of killing himself, but he does, like, he's a bad guy.
I think the only murder he's committed on the screen was Loki and his daughter.
And Vision.
Do you really consider Vision as a murder? He's not really a human. He's not really a living, breathing creature.
He let Vision die, right? He watched him die the first time. Just to bring him back. I'm
not saying that's not sadistic. I'm just saying, like, do you really want to consider him a living creature? Like, even if the snap did kill the other half of the Avengers instead of the half that, you know, the contracts are still on for, Vision would have been perfectly safe, because he's not a living creature. He's completely AI. So do you really want to consider that as a kill?
Until Infinity War, where they figure out that Vision was saved by Shuri before she was done. Mm. Boom. Put that sauce on your taco. So to continue with Thanos, now that you've hit all my bullet points, I got nothing to talk about now. You smacked all my bullet points on the head. You one-shotted it like a hammer.
But no, he is trying to do the right thing. And I put quotations around it because he's trying to make sure there's enough resources for future generations. The thing is, I don't think he really took into consideration the fact that, you know, plants are considered living beings. And if you're wiping out half of all life, that's half of the resources getting depleted even further.
Yeah, well, I feel like... with
Endgame, he's on the side of Lil Dicky on his song Earth. But
I realize that maybe using the Infinity Gauntlet was a mistake, because now he's going to have everybody in the universe out.
Yeah.
Which is going to bring some big baddies. On top of that, he's going to bring the fight to Earth. I think he's going to come to Earth right as soon as Endgame starts. Like, the Avengers are going to go attack him, they're going to lose, and then Thanos is like, well, I'm going to Earth, and I'm going to go destroy it now.
I'm going to destroy it. Just me. Fine. Just I'll do it fine. Myself.
All alone. No Black Order. They're all dead. His Outriders are probably almost all depleted as well. It's just going to be Thanos by himself. Full armor. Gauntlet. Double-sided bladed windshield wiper. Blade. Whatever you want to call it.
All right.
There we go. I hope you're excited for Thursday.
Yep, I'm excited for Thursday.
I definitely am myself.
I am. Right. I'm going to release this tomorrow on New Comic Book Day. So Thursday is tomorrow.
What? Thursday is tomorrow. Tomorrow, Thursday will be tomorrow. Yes, that is correct.
By the time this is posted, tomorrow will be when we're seeing Endgame.
Oh. That's exciting.
John's soapbox. Looking back at the character development of Black Widow, we have to be reminded that Black Widow is ridiculously old, bringing with that a large amount of skill to the team. Looking at strictly just the movies, in the Red Room scene in Winter Soldier, it seems like she's somewhere around 15. With that, and her being at least 10 years of being active before Avengers, and the history between her and Hawkeye, and the length of the reign of Soviet Union, she'd have to be at least 45, and at most, somewhere around 80 years old. Until next week, true believers, Stan Lee forever.
So, I think that's about all we have for us today. If you like the content that we are putting out, you can visit us at mb-3d.com/agent-blue.
You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Agent Blue Podcast. Facebook is separate words. Instagram is all one word. If you would like to support us, you could go back to mb-3d.com/donate and pick the Agent Blue tab. Or you could go to patreon.com/mb3. There will be nothing in the doobly ho below on the website, so you don't really need to try to download anything unless you want to download the podcast itself. But that's all we got for you today. From us here at Agent Blue, peace.